All right, and welcome everybody to this session. So it's 1:30, so I'm just going to start on time. Thanks everyone for being here and attending this session on unit testing for SharePoint services that rocks. So we're going to talk a lot about unit testing today. There's going to be a lot of demos, don't worry, but I'll start with a couple slides to explain what we do. My name is Pelly Dialux. I live in Redmond in Washington, so I work for Microsoft Research, but you can see in my name that actually I'm from Belgium, and I've been working there for 5 years now. We work in a group called Research and Software Engineering in Microsoft Research, so we care about compilers, runtimes, languages, and we work very closely with Visual Studio. So this is the result of this work, those two tools called PECs and MOLs that work pretty well in the SharePoint, for SharePoint. So that's what I'm going to talk about. All those tools can be downloaded from DevLabs, and you can just play with them in Visual Studio 2008 or 2010. But just don't do it right now, and listen to the talk, and then do it at the end. So before I go on to the talk, I just want to ask, so who does unit testing here? I guess it's a unit testing session, so there's a lot of hands written. And I guess unit testing for SharePoint? Okay, not a lot of hands raised. Who drives a Ferrari? Okay, nobody drives. Oh, whoops. One person. Maybe we should chat after the talk. Okay, small one. All right, I'm going to try not to laugh, otherwise the mic doesn't like it. All right, so what are we going to talk about? Let's give us some objectives. At the end of this session, I hope you get three things. You learn how to use our framework called MOLs to isolate your tests. This will be very important if you want to write unit tests for SharePoint. You're going to understand how to use PECs and write what we call parameterized unit tests. And of course, you're going to learn how to apply that to SharePoint services. So the step three comes because before we go into SharePoint, we're going to learn those tools on a simpler example that I use. It's a toy example, and it shows all the problems of SharePoint, but on a much more restricted example. So the example is here, and you can see the title of the slide is called Quiz. So the question is for you, what's wrong with the code? When you see a title with quiz title, when we see a slide with the quiz title, there's going to be a couple answers that I'm going to give you, but I'll give you a couple seconds to think about it and come up with your own answers. So the game here is you have this great piece of code that they used to write in the previous century, I guess, which checks that the date is never the year 2000. And if it is, then it throws an exception. So what's the problem here when we're trying to unit test this code? And you've been looking at this code for a couple seconds now, so I'm gonna give you some answers. Well, it compiles, everything's okay, might not be the answer. A better answer might be, it depends on the current machine clock, or it is impossible to test. They're kind of tied together. And why is that? Why is that a problem? The problem is, you don't control the machine clock. It's very hard for you to make the state of your machine in such that you go and hit this exception. It's very hard to set your machine to the year 2000. By the time you do that, well, it has gone to the next second and so forth. And it is the same story that you get in SharePoint. It is very hard to get your SharePoint environment into a state where you can test your two little lines of code in your SharePoint service. You have to pay the price of deploying, setting up the SharePoint site, creating all the environment to test a couple lines of code, and it takes time and resources. So it is basically the same problem on a much smaller case, and we're gonna show how MOLs can help on this little program. So now the question would be, how do you deal with that? How do you take time, how do you take control of time? There's a number of approaches to that in terms of dealing with testability. Unfortunately, there's no mic around, so I cannot really ask people for the answer. So one of the answer would be you stub the class. So you introduce an interface for the date time, and you have an abstraction.
You should have asked for the going instead.
So the other answer would be you ask for the time instead of directly calling to date time. Let's see, what we can do. So one of the answer, number two, we got was to introduce an interface. I didn't get in my pre-canned answer yours, but number one, of course, is a bit problematic because, well, it's a static method, and you cannot override static methods. Number two would be a great solution, but in some cases, it's not feasible. And we're not going to talk about this solution in this talk. So the message here is, if you can, use abstractions. But if you can't, then you're at the right talk. The third one is more interesting. You want to replace date time now by a method that always returns the year 2000. Now, how are we going to do that? And of course, number four is not in a great solution because it impacts your entire machine, right? So what we'd like to do is to write something like this. I want to redefine what date time now is. I want to assign a new delegate. So if you're familiar with the anonymous methods in C#, the line here defines a function. So, that was supposed to be a square. With control, it works better. All right, so that is a method that returns a date time. And the intent of this line is to replace date time now by a method that always returned the year 2000. By doing so, we would hit the exception we want. Of course, you can't do that in .NET. This is not JavaScript. But that's really what we want to do. And that is what Moles allows you to do. So I'm going to show you how it works. But in essence, Moles allows you to replace any method by a delegate. Okay, so how does it work? You have the date time now method. And this method is a func of date time. Now, what is a func of date time? Not everyone might be familiar with this notation, so I have another quiz for that. So we step back from the Moles and we go back into C#. So this is a quiz about funcs and actions. So those are two core delegates that exist in the CLR and the base class libraries. So the func is a signature of a method that takes, an R as a generic argument, and it returns a value. So func returns value, and actions don't return values. And each one of them might have arguments, right? So using those delegates, you can play a game. For example, here, the game is match each delegate to the method. So what is action string? So what would be the match for item number one? B? Anybody want to say A? So B is the correct answer. Very good. Because it takes a string, right? And of course, now you know that two matches with A, right? So it's very important to understand these little signatures because we use it all along in the rest of the talk. Okay, so now we're back with our date time now, which is a func of date time. So if you remember what a func is, it takes no arguments and returns the date time, right? And what we're going to do in Moles, we're going to code-generate a new type called mDateTime. So here you can see our great naming convention. It's an M. And the type of that property is a func of date time. So it's exactly what we want. It's a property we can assign a new delegate. And it's type safe because we have C# takes care of that. To create the type names, we use a simple naming convention so that you can find the mole type very easily. M plus the type name gives you the mole of date time. And for the properties and the methods, methods plus, in this case, get, because it's a getter, you'll get the property getter. So this will become crystal clear when we do a demo and everything kicks in into IntelliSense. Now what happens in the setter would be worth another talk, but I'm not going to go into details. We use a profiler to inject detours into methods. That means we, in every method, we inject a little piece of code that asks, well, is there a delegate for this the current method? If there is one, don't execute the method. execute the delegate and return. So we inject shortcuts into method, and that's how we can go into APIs and then run your code, right? So that happens in the setter. That's where all the engineering happens, and you shouldn't really know too much about it. So that's all I'm going to talk about it. I have some backup slides. If we have time, we can drill a little bit deeper. All right. Now, what can I do with my mole? Well, I can do what I wanted to do in the previous slide. I can assign a delegate that is a func of date time that always returned the year 2000. Now, let's look at this in more details. So it's pretty verbose and a bit ugly right now. There's a cast, there's this delegate business. So another step back into C-sharp 3.0. They introduce what they call lambda. It's a very scary word, but we're going to learn about it right now. So the func here is not useful because C-sharp can infer it. And there is a new notation in C-sharp 3.0 called lambdas. So instead of this delegate, you can basically say it's a method that has no arguments. This is the parenthesis. And it returns, and then it executes this body. And in fact, because this method has only one return statement, you don't have to pay the price of the curly braces. So it kind of shrinks the amount of code you need to write to build those delegates. And you'll see it's very useful when you write code with moles. So to make sure you're experts with lambdas, I have a little quiz for you. So everybody think about matching those three. So on the left, we have three lambda expressions. And on the right, three methods that need to be matched. I'll give you a couple of seconds to reason about this, and then start asking questions. So who has an idea for number one? So number one would be C. So it takes no arguments and returns a string. That looks good. Number two? B. So one argument and returns nothing. And then number three, well, would be A. One argument and returns a Boolean. So you quickly get the idea of lambdas, and they're pretty easy to read once you get accustomed to it. So we're going to use that quite a lot. So if you were familiar with all those idioms, this should be the end of the C-sharp 101, and we can go into moles pretty quickly. All right. So how does it fit together? When you write a unit test using moles, what you're going to do is set up your redirection, your redefining what the APIs do. So in this case, we start by saying, well, in the future, whenever you decide to call mDateTime, dateTime now, run this delegate instead. Always return the year 2000. And also, what we need to do, I guess this needs to be somewhere else, is we need to run into a host type. And the reason is we need to instrument those methods. So remember that the way moles work is through a profiler. A profiler needs to be registered in a special way. That means we need to run in a special environment. And that's supported by MS test through a host type attribute. We actually support the other framework like NUnit, MBUnit, and XUnit. All right. So that was pretty much all the slides I had for you today. And then we can go into the demo part. So I'm going to show all I did in the slides today on this little example. So here we have our test method that checks that if date time now is the year 2000, it asserts. And so let's get started. So to work with moles, first you need to tell our little compiler what you want to replace. So the first thing we're going to do is add a new item to the test project. So I go through the menu. I do, new item. And you'll see there is a new item in the list of files here called moles and stub for testing. So I'm going to go and rename that file mscorelib. Anybody has an idea what mscorelib stands for? So mscorelib is the library that contains the BCL. In particular, is the library that contains date time. So here what we did is we defined this moles file, which controls our little compiler. So what you can see in the bottom is the is a little progress bar here that is basically telling us that our compiler is generating all this mole type for all the types in MSCoreLib. Once this is done, this is pre-compiled in assembly and added to your project. All right, let's take a look at that. So here you can see that we have our test project. We've created a number of files here, but the most interesting one is there is now a new reference called mscorelib.moles in your test project, and this contains all the mole types. Now, if we look into this assembly using the object browser, you can see a number of namespaces all ended up with .moles. So we always append the .mole suffix. This is the naming convention. So I'm going to look for the mDateTime type. So in this case, let's scroll down. Let's see mDateTime, right? And then for every method in dateTime, there is a property defining that type. In particular, there's a property called now get. And if we take a look at that property, it's exactly what we wanted. It's a setter that whose type is a func of dateTime. So we can use that to replace the implementation of dateTime now in a strongly typed fashion using IntelliSense and so forth. So now that this is done, I can just close this file. And I can go ahead and say mDateTime. Of course, it's not resolved because it's a separate namespace. So I'm going to do control dot. And the IntelliSense menu is there. I'm just going to press enter. And now squigglies are going away. They're going away. Now I'm going to type now. And you can see that quickly the simple naming convention narrows the choices that you have. Now I can write my delegates. New date time 2001. Great. And I can just go and say, oh, I need a host type. The host type is moles. And I can just go and say run test. So this is the UI from MS Test, the test runner. And we can see that it's running the test case, and it actually hit the bug. Right. So maybe I forgot to do the demo without the redirection. And run again. So what's going to happen if we don't take control of dateTime now? Anybody has an idea? Yay, it's green. The unit tests are passing. Of course, there's a bug lurking, but we couldn't hit it. So whenever we turn on the redirection, then we can take control of the time. So this might not look obvious. What I'm going to do is put a breakpoint in that delegate, and we'll see exactly how things happen. So I'm going to go here and then click on debug, toggle breakpoint. Right. And now I'm going to go and launch this test under the debugger. Actually, you can do it from here. You can do it from here. So what we expect to see is a stack trace where we've entered the unit test. Then we've entered dateTime now. And then we are in our delegate. So where is my call stack? Debug, sorry about that. Let's find a call stack. All right. So when you look at the call stack, you have here the unit test, right? And then we've entered dateTime now that lives in MSCoreLib. So that's the BCL. And then we are in our shortcut. That is the name of the method C# created for you. In fact, if I continue to step, I can see I go out of dateTime now, and then I take the branch. So this is the essence of moles. And you can see there are some danger about replacing dateTime now. Everybody uses it. This is the essence of moles. it allows you to replace any .NET method with your own delegate, even if it's static, even if it's in a sealed type, and so forth. The scope of the replacement, so the question is, what is the scope of the replacement? The scope of the replacement is the unit test by default. You can control that by resetting your redirection by assigning null. This removes the redirection, right? But by default, we take care of cleaning all the redirection that you've enabled. They're very dangerous. Everybody uses daytime now. Even the serialization code that we use to communicate between the debugger and Visual Studio. Anyway, so that is the essence of moles. So I think we've learned, we achieved the first goal, which is understanding moles. And then I go and I have a couple slides about PEX. So PEX is about test generation. So when we look at the test case that we've written, there is something a little bit annoying. And the question is, why did we have to put a magic date in it? Why did we have to figure out that we needed to run the year 2000 to hit a bug? And really what we want to say is, my code should never crash at any point in time. And the way we do that is by refactoring that magic number into an argument. And now what we're saying is, give me any time and run my code, and it should not crash. And this is what we call parameterized unit testing. You move from a single scenario with baked value into a function that covers more behaviors. And you do it every day when you refactor methods. You generalize or you extract pieces of functionality. And here, what you do with PEX, you're saying, whatever the time it is, I don't want it to crash, or I want it to work correctly, or so forth. And PEX is a tool that will generate data for you. PEX will try to cover every reachable branch, starting from that test case. And assertions are branches. That is the connection. You write assertions. These are branches. PEX will try to cover them. If it does, it found the bug. The more assertion you give to PEX, the more it will try to find bugs for you. When PEX finds an input that increases code coverage, it saves it as a unit test. So here you can see that we had a parameterized test called test, and then two generated unit tests called test01, test02 that call back into the parameterized test. So the end product of the tool is a test suite that you can run on your build or something like that. If we find a bug, you can go and debug the test case. It's not a likely bug, it's an actual bug. Take the unit test, run it under the debugger, figure out what's wrong. Right? Whoops, that wasn't the right key. Wanted to switch back to the demo. So what we want to do here is refactor that test case and make it a parameterized test case. So what I'm going to do first is get rid of those two attributes and call it, and add the PEX method attribute, which is our attribute to mark parameterized unit test. It comes in the Microsoft.pex.framework DLL that I already added in the project. And if you follow our tutorial, you'll get there pretty easily. And then the next step is to add this argument. There's nothing magic about it. I'm adding an argument and replacing the magic number here. Right. So far, so good. I'm building. Built. And now what I'm going to do is right-click in the method and click on this new button called Run PEX Explorations. Right. So don't click on Run Tests. Click on this guy. Right. Let's go. So this will show a new UI. And let's talk a little bit about it. So as I mentioned, PEX generates test cases, and it shows them to you in a table. It also saves them in the project. But let's talk about the table. This table is an input-output table for you. It's an input-output table because, for example, time here is representing the input time. So every row in the table is a test case. So PEG started with the simplest date time that exists, which is the year 1, 1st of January. Interestingly, it's not the year 0. But this is basically default date time. And then it figured out that there was a branch that wasn't covered because the date wasn't the year 2000. And then it tried that input, which triggered the bug. So without specifying anything, PEX went in and generated 2 test cases. Not a million, not a zillion, not 10. 2 test cases that were sufficient to cover all the interesting cases in our code. And we could, and PEC could reason about the code because we had isolated the code from the environment. If you didn't isolate from daytime now, PEC doesn't understand the time. It doesn't understand the machine clock. It's the hardware. But it understands delegates. Right. So that is the story behind moles and PEC. To give you a background on how those two are, we've been working on PEC for 4 years now. And we've built moles to help PEX in an environment where you have a lot of dependencies. And moles was really designed to work with PEX. Okay.
A small question.
Yes?
But if the daytime was nullable, would it also detect
it? Yes, PEX can generate nullable types. And it,
I would see 3 test cases.
Yeah, you would see 3 test cases. Just for fun, let me delete the test case. If I would put object here, so your question is, if I would do if I equals hello world, so PEX doesn't, the input doesn't specify the type, right? And let's do this, found it, and then rerun PEX again. PEX understands all the semantics of the .NET runtime. It understands what every instruction means. So it understands casting all the type system constraints. Right? So in this case, it detected that you had a constraint that I should be a string. Right? And then it, it provided an input for that. Right. All right. So back to the slides, a little bit. What we've learned so far is how you can use moles to isolate your code, replace any .NET method with your delegates, and how to achieve high code coverage with PEX. We could talk a long time about PEX, so I'm just scratching the surface here. So that was a toy example. And before I move on to SharePoint, I just want to remember, I just want to say that these tools, these automated tools, they need assertions. The only thing PEX tries to do is to cover your code. It doesn't know about correctness. If you don't write assertion, you won't get the best out of them. If you don't write assertion, you would only find null reference, index out of range, and overflows. But if you write assertions, you'll have a tool that tries to break it. Anyway. So now that we know how to do moles and PEX, let's go into SharePoint. And we should be done with slides. So I have a little, let's close this. I have a little piece of SharePoint code, and it's intentionally quite simple and maybe totally wrong. But it's a SP item event receiver that handles the item updated. It gets the web, then the list, then the item, extract the content type, and then does something with it, which we'll talk about later, and then assigns it to the title. So you're all SharePoint experts, and you've done unit testing with SharePoint. You probably know what the issue is here if you want to unit test this. But I'm going to go through that in the unit test. Okay, so now we have a unit test here. It's already a PEX method. And I've prepared 3 sections in my unit test, arrange, when I'm going to set up the data and the state, and act, when I'm going to call my API in the test, and then assert, when I'm going to put my assertions. And so far, what my my test does, it instantiates my type and then calls it with null. Not a great test case, really not interesting. So the first thing I want to do is get this this property, this SP, what is it? SP item event properties. And then here is the problem. There's no constructors for me. Constructors are internal. So I cannot instantiate that type without being live on a SharePoint website. That means I need to pay for the price of deployment, setting up all the, you know, launching IIS and so forth. And I really don't want to do that. I have a couple lines of code to test. So this is where moles comes into the play. So I've pre-generated the moles for SharePoint, so we don't have to do that. So I'm going to add M here. And you can see the type resolves. It's happy. It's saying, what is it saying? It initializes a mole instance. And I'm just going to do a new and then pass props here. And as you can see, there's no more squigglies. C sharp is actually happy. I'm going to build and the build pass. So how is it possible? SP item event properties is sealed. You cannot inherit from it. So we play a little trick here. The mole of SP item event properties holds a runtime instance of SP item event properties. So and there is an implicit cast operator defined on it. So what happens is that we really write this. And then we extract the runtime instance from that mole. Right. But C# does it for us, so you don't have to care about it. The idea is we have an instance of that type in the mole. And we say an initialized instance because we haven't run any constructor on it. It's like you do a default, it's like when you do a default of a struct. All the fields are null. But since we're never going to run the code of that type, it doesn't matter. But it's just for type safety. So now I can just right-click and run packs. And now you're going to see the flow of how you build moles. The first time we're going to try to run a method on that type, the mole framework is going to disallow it. It's going to detour every single method of that type to a not implemented exception. And this is what you can see here. We hit one test case. That test case threw a mole unimplemented exception. And the message is SP item event properties get web was not moled. Right. If you go back to the code, or in fact, if I click on this, then click on the stack trace, here, takes me to the code. And you can see that, in fact, this is the bad guy. We try to access this object that is not initialized. So the message here, it gives you a path towards isolation. You know which is the, what is the next method call you need to isolate from. So I'm going to go back to my test case. And it's weird. Okay, and I'm going to say props dots web. So remember the naming convention. It's the property name. It's a getter. I do get. And then I need a delegate that returns an SP web. And I can just instantiate a new mole of SP web. Right. Now, if I run this, what I hope is I go past get web, and I get to the next method call, which is get lists. And you can see that we're going to do and iterate a bunch of times until we go through all the APIs. It might sound a little tedious. We'll see a better approach at the end of the talk. Okay, so just to make things prettier, we can actually use Object Initializer. It's another feature of C# 3.0. So what we can do is basically add curlies after the constructor and write something like this. So inside of this curly braces, I can initialize properties. So I can package a number of properties that need to be initialized on that type and not write props all the time, right? So we'll use that quite a bit. And you can see that C# is happy, it builds. And now what we need is a list from the web. So I'm going to do the same trick here. I'm going to say list, get, and what is a list? It's a new MSP list collection. Sounds good. And then close the brackets. No curlies, everybody's building. And I can run again. And we're going to have to go through all the APIs until we've fully isolated from SharePoint. So the next one is get list ID. And that's this guy. Right. And I'm going to solve this guy too at once. So I'm going to go here. Since I'm going to need two values, I'm going to say list ID equals default good. And list item ID equals 0. Here I'm going to say list ID, return list ID, great. List item ID equals list item ID. And you can see that IntelliSense really helps you. A simple naming convention and IntelliSense, and you can go through all these APIs fairly easily. So I'm just going to run again. And you can see here that the tool is driving you towards isolation. Wherever the execution goes and you hit something you haven't isolated, it will tell you. So the next step is get item. Get item is indexer. So if you look at where we are here, right, at this character, right? That's the indexer. It's called item. So we are in this collection, and we want to replace the getter that takes good. So it takes an ID, and it returns a new MSP list item. That would be SP. And done. Okay. Something was wrong. Let's take a look. It returns a list. Ooh. I went too fast here. All right. And then I can run again. And I'm doing step by step here. When you run it on your code, you don't have to do that. You can isolate more quickly or reuse those isolation across different tests. So the next step is get item by ID, which takes an integer. Oops. Try that again. Get item by ID, integer, sounds great. Item ID, and return MSP list item. So it's starting to be quite nested. We'll see what we can do about that. And I run again. It's very mechanical. And we end up at the place that we are interested in, which is accessing the values in the item. So the item get, which takes a string, so we have a name of a field. And we want to do something about it. Okay, this is where PEGs come into the picture. So first thing we do is we make sure that we fetch the value of the right field. Notice that I can simply call the regular assertion here. I don't have to use any specialized API. And then what I want to do is return a content type. But I don't have any. Oops. So what I'm going to do is I define this method, and I'm going to say content type. Let's make it a hard-coded string for now. Hello world. And it's happy. And the next problem is going to be that, well, when we assign the title, then the setter is not going to be mold. So I'm going to go and add the setter. So it takes a string, and that's going to be a name and a value. What we want to first assert is that the name is the title, right? And then what we want to do here is store that value, that we received and assert at the end of the test that it has been assigned. So what I'm going to do is create a local called title. Okay, this is very cool. I'm going to assign it here. Whoops. Give me the right location. All right. And then deep down at the test, I'm going to assert that the data flow that I want, which is content, was assigned into title, worked. All right. Now the question for you is, will that work? So we have a local, which we assign in delegates, and then we assert the value here. And the answer, it just works. C# creates what we call a closure. Your local is not a local anymore. It lives on the heap. You can see side effects. So really the answer is, it just works. You do it every day if you write delegates, but you don't realize it. In fact, now I can run my test. And we're happy. So you can see it's green. There's no more failure. And if we didn't have PEX, we would be in the happy stage where we've done our unit test, we got coverage, we can go for the next method. Now, what should we do when you see this test? What can you do? And remember, to give you a hint, I've hidden a bunch of stuff here. I had this validation code for the content type. So I casted it to a string, and then I check whether it's in some range, and I check that it didn't have a new line. So there is some basic business intelligence or branching that happens based on the data. And of course, I don't have coverage for that because I only have a single test case that tests the happy path. That's typical of unit testing. So I want to leverage PEX to do that. And the way we do it is like in the example, this looks like a great candidate to make it a parameter. So I'm going to cut this guy. We don't need this anymore. And I'm going to make it an argument. So the message here is, for any content type, it should work, or it should throw some exception or do some validation or something. Right? Now when I build my solution now, you see there's a problem. The problem comes from the fact that we've changed the signature of our test case. We've added an argument, and the generated test that lives here, I forgot to mention that, but generated test lives here in a separate file, doesn't compile anymore because we've changed the signature and we didn't use the refactoring tools. This happens also in unit testing. The way we deal with that, we generate a test case, it's a bit easier. We have a menu here that allows us to say, delete all the generated tests in the class. That's what I'm going to do. I say right-click, PEX, delete unit tests in the class, and they're gone, which effectively fixes the build issue. It doesn't matter. You run PEX again, you get a new test suite. What really matters is this parameterized test. So it happens quite a bit when you refactor your test case that your entire test suite is invalidated because you've added an argument. Just delete them, regenerate them again. Okay, now I'm going to run PEX. So I expect PEX to generate interesting strings to cover all the cases. And you can see that bad things happened. So PEX generated 5 test cases, which in fact covered all the interesting branches in the program. Although I thought I was done, because I had put hello world through my code and everything was green. But it went and looked for corner cases. So the first one is the null dereference, and then there's argument exception. So let's take a look at the first one. So I'm going to jump to the stack trace. The first one is quite obvious. I'll let you think about it a little bit. And again, if you don't understand how it failed, take the test case and run it under the debugger and figure it out. The problem is if we pass a null as an input here, so null as an input, that means null comes here, content type is null, and then we get the null reference here. So we need to deal with the null case here. And again, that might not happen in SharePoint, but I wasn't aware of that when I built a little example. But what I want to do here is say, throw if content type is null. Right. That was a missing check. Now, if I run PEX again, what I expect is an argument null exception instead of this null reference. And it didn't happen. Let's see. Okay. I use this great mirroring solution to clean up my solution all the time, and it seems that I fixed the wrong file. So let's fix it again. And run PEX again. And now we're happy. We can see that our first case is now an argument null exception. Now, when you look at this table of exceptions, most of them are actually okay. They're actually preconditions. They are argument validation, in a sense, something that you want to test and you want test case. So you want those negative test case, those expected exception test case, right? So the issue with parameterized unit tests is you cover both passing and failing scenario with the same code. So the way we deal with that is we give you filters. And one of the filters is to annotate the method with the PEX allowed exception attribute. So here, if you look at the bottom here, you have a button called allow exception. And when you click on that, it gives you a dialog. The dialog explains you in details what we're going to do to your code, but you can just click on apply. And now if we go back to the test case, you can see that there is a new exception. There is a new attribute. And the attribute is saying, whenever you see an argument exception that bubbles up of the test case, it is a valid test case. It is a negative test case. Right? So in that case, this should take care of the ones that throw argument exception. Now what we expect to see is the ones that throw argument exception are now green. Okay, so that's good, but we still have the two other ones. So what I'm going to do is be a little bit more aggressive and say that anything that inherits from argument exception is okay. And there's many ways you can tune this for your own policy in your code base. This is kind of the easiest when we do a demo. So now anything that throws that inherits from argument exception is going to be considered as okay. And we can see that we have now five test cases which are all passing, which give us a little test suite for our scenario. So workaround, I'm just going to regenerate them. All right, and just to be sure, let's go to the test view. Refresh the test view. You can see that we have new five test cases here. Great names, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. This is a little annoying bug. Hopefully, will be fixed one day. But if you select those tests and you run them, what we expect to see is five passing tests. So those tests, you can go check in into your product, run that in your build, get coverage data, and so forth, like you do with traditional unit testing, but for SharePoint. All the tests pass, we're happy. Okay, so what did we see today? We saw how to use moles to isolate unit tests. Moles will work with any technology, SharePoint in particular. We saw how to use PEX to write parameterized unit tests. And then we saw how to write to apply moles and pecs to SharePoint services. So I wasn't sure how fast I would go, but it seems I have a lot of time, so we can go into the cool stuff. And try to see what's the problem that we have right now. So it's all great, it's all green. There are two issues. First, it's a bit of a lot of curly braces and nested code, right? Which can be a bit frightening. So we want to improve that. And the other problem is more related to mocking. It's very insidious. Because we faked every single method, method by method, if at any point in time you change that order in your product, you will break the test. No matter what framework you're using. So that's what I'm going to do just for fun. I'm going to go here. And I'm going to do an innocent change. Instead of get item by ID, I'm going to use the indexer, which I think is the same. Nobody's moving. So I'll assume they work exactly the same. Nobody's trying to kill me. OK, good. It didn't work. OK. Dot items. Does that make sense? OK. C sharp is happy. I can run again. So let's go back to my test case and run pecs. Or in, I don't even have to do that. Actually, I can go to my test view and run my test case again. They're generated. I can just run them in my build. And now what happens is a disaster. They all failed, all of them. And they all failed for the same reason as that. Here we go. We didn't redefine getting the items. Right. And this is typical from mock-based testing. As soon as you go out of the path that you've defined, you have a lot of work to make your test work again. So this is something we want to address. And I'm going to show you how. All right, so let's close this. So it's, has anybody experienced that firsthand? A great test suite, you make a change, and then it's broken? Sorry?
I only use Java mocking framework, but it's the same.
It should be the same experience no matter what language or runtime you're using. So it's a typical problem for mock framework, not just SharePoint. Or not just moles. So what are we trying to do when we do all this function stuff? We're trying to fake state. We're trying to say, I want a SharePoint instance with a web. This web has a list. This list has an item. The item has two fields. And one of them is assigned to this string. And then at the end, we want to say, the title field has been assigned to a particular value. So let's go back to that. So I'm going to delete all that. In fact, I'm going to zoom in again. And I'm going to add a comment. Given a web with a list, let's make multi-lines, with a list which has ID equals list ID and two fields, content type, title, with a list item, which has ID equals list item. I'm just writing that down so I can translate it to C sharp afterwards. And then once we have that, and then we have fields, which is content type, null, that's the state of our item. Then after item updated, the title is equals to content type. OK. When you write it in English, that is what your test is supposed to do. And in fact, that's what you do when you do integration tests. You use the API, you set up your SharePoint state into a certain state, you run your code, and then you check that you ended up in another state. And we're going to do that here. So to deal with that, what we've started to do is write little models of SharePoint around moles. So we totally hide the moles, and we write simplified model of a SharePoint that allows you to set the state of SharePoint easily. And these models ship with PEX. They are in this project called moles.sharepoint. It's a work in progress. You'll see there will be a lot of evolution there. But we think that's the way to go. And we're giving you the sources because the model cannot be complete. If you're missing a piece of the model for your own code, you'll have to write it yourself. And that's why we give you sources for that. So what do they look like? First, they all start with B for behavior. Oops, sorry about that. For behavior. So I'm going to do a BSP web. All right. So I'm creating a web. It's similar to ADI of moles, but I don't have access to the low-level functions. What I can do is say, I want a list. So I'm going to say web set one. No, lists set one. Okay. What this does, it sets the state of the web instance to one list and returns it. There are other overloads to set to multiple and so forth. These are really APIs to set the state. That's what you want to do in this section of the test case. Let's set some state. And then I translate what I had in my English. So list ID equals list ID, great. And then list.fields. And I'm going to say set all. And then I set content type. And then title. Right. And you can see also that with those little models, which we call behave types, we've hidden totally the delegate business. It's hidden in the implementation. In fact, if we go into this guy, you'll see that, ooh, that might not be a good example. Here is where we set up the model. We've refactored whatever we use for the models and put them in this little model. So now that we have a list with some field, we can go for the next slide. We want an item. So we're going to say that you have one item. The item ID is equal to the list item ID. And we want to set the values. So we're going to say set item values, set all, content type, null. Right. Okay. Now, let's move those comments after the call. Oh, and I need a props. Okay, we need an event. So props is going to be a BSP event item properties. And we're just going to assign, no, we need a, it's really a list item. I'm going to assign it a list item. All right. So C# is happy. So we built a web with a list, with an item. We set the value in there, and we attached it to our event, right? And then at the end, what we want to assert is, in fact, we don't need this guy. We don't need the title. We want to assert that the item value at index one, which is a title, is equal to content type. All right. Does that sound more readable to you guys? So we get the idea. We want to talk about state, going from one state to another, rather than talking about low-level function behavior. And now I run PEX. And you can see that PEX generates 5 passing test cases. And if I go into my code and change things back, and I run PEX again, it passes again. Now, what would happen if you wouldn't have model get item by ID in your model? It's very simple. You fix the model once and for all, and then you reuse it all over the place in your test case. So instead of sprinkling your code and creating all those mocks everywhere, you want to reuse them. I'm going to show you one of them quickly. Let's see. An easy one. Let's pick anyone. That one is really not interesting. List item should be a cool one. Okay, great. So this is the constructor of the model for the list item. And basically what I do is I instantiate a new mole here. And whenever I need to mole a method in SharePoint on this item, I go here and I add it. And I centralize what I think SharePoint is supposed to do here in a simplified fashion. So for example, when you do item get GUID, what does it mean? It means you get the parent list, and then you get the fields, you iterate over the fields, and then you get the value. And if it's not true, you throw an argument exception. To a certain degree, this is what SharePoint does. Good enough for the unit testing. And this is the whole approach. This is the whole idea behind modeling. It's a simpler implementation that gives you enough behavior to make it interesting for testing. And more importantly, you refactor that into a place that all your test cases can use, your colleagues can use. Right. So we think that's going to be, that's really what we want to go. I'm running on the version of PEX that ships. And these are the models we've had so far. It'll probably be beefed up in the future, but you probably find places where you're missing methods and you can just add them. So I think I'm 15 minutes in advance, and usually when this happens, I can go in many directions. So maybe I'm going to start asking questions to you guys. What do you want to learn more about? So the question is, can you use a setup method at the class level, for example, to set up your SharePoint state and then run your test? And the answer is, don't do that with PEX. Because PEX doesn't track the data flow and the control flow in the setup. And you shouldn't have to do it if you isolate correctly your code. So why do you have a class setup? Because usually you need to set up a database and it's very slow. If you've isolated your code, it doesn't happen. And the reason is, how long does it take for PEX to generate 5 test cases? Doesn't want to show up. It's pending. Now it's very slow. Okay, how long does it take for PEX to generate 5 test cases whenever it decides to start? How long does it take usually? No, a matter of second, definitely under a minute. We have bounds where we stop PEX after a minute. This is less than what it takes you to deploy. Right. So that's one of the benefits of being isolated. So the answer to your question would be don't do that. In fact, when you look at frameworks like XUnit, they've removed that feature. It's a great feature if you do integration testing, definitely. But if you want to do solid unit testing that's isolated, you don't need it. Yeah, we have 10 minutes, so shoot away or ask for more demos.
The question about the argument exception that you allow in the current unit test, is there a way to prevent the argument exception to occur deeper in the code stack so that you allow it only for that method?
Yeah, so it's an excellent question. The question is, you catch an argument exception. Is there a way to restrict it to certain throw sites, so thrown by certain method or certain types? And yes, the answer is yes, and I can show you that right now. So I didn't talk about that, but we have a little attribute here called PEX class, and it takes a type, and the type is the type under test. So we think that every type deserves a test type. And you're basically giving us a hint there saying, this is the type I'm testing. Now, we can use that to do a smarter filtering of exceptions. And the way we can do that is say, pex allowed exception. Allowed exception from type under test. Yeah. We have long attribute names. OK, so this is the version of the allowed exception that is more targeted. In fact, let's say I do foo substring. That's not going to work, right? That's going to throw an argument exception from the CLR. So if I run pex here, it's going to flag it as an error because it didn't come from my type. That means I violated one of the contracts of the API I'm calling. Now, if it's thrown for my type, then the filter is happy and flag them as passing test case. There's many ways to tweak that. It really depends on how you want to deal with exceptions and so forth. Sorry?
Can you also parse in bold, like you get on the content type event properties, but as soon as you hit the SP web, actually get an SP web which is already there in my SharePoint site.
Yeah, you can. You can partially mole. You can also mole constructors. So you can, when an object is created in a method, you can hijack it in a sense. You can partially mole, definitely. It's a dangerous business because you're kind of replacing parts. But definitely, and the way you would do it, let's say you have an SP web coming from somewhere. You would just create a new MSP web around it. And then you have access to whatever you want to replace on that instance, right? And this doesn't install any default behavior. Only if you provide the empty constructor, then the frameworks create the runtime instance and disallow any execution on that instance. So it's very flexible in that aspect and dangerous. So RhinoMox relies on virtual methods, and MockU2, and I guess NMock2. Because of the way the API of SharePoint is done with sealed-typed internal constructor, you cannot use those frameworks. Or at least I don't know a way to use them. There are other commercial products like TypeMock Isolator that allow to do the same things as moles. Great products. That you can find online, yes. This is a framework that was born to help PEX, and it's been designed to be PEX friendly, more than user friendly. And that has been the motivation, because tools like PEX are very dependent on the environment. We don't understand the file system, so we need a way to replace it with something we can understand. That has driven the motivation behind moles. For the longest time, we told people, look, PEX is a unit test tool. First do your job, write testable code, and then apply PEX to it. That doesn't always happen in practice. So we've provided the tools to make it happen. Yep?
Which flavor of Visual Studio is framework?
Currently, this is a download from the internet, from DevLabs. So you need team engineering or team test to run it, or you need Visual Studio 2010 Ultimate Beta 2 to run it. In the future, we're moving towards a power tool, but it's not clear now in which queue, what will be the requirements for the tool. But it's moving. So this can be downloaded from DevLabs today. And something I want to mention and I don't have any slides for it, is okay. Let's show the funny desktop. We have a forum, and it's pretty active. And I don't have internet, so I guess that's the forum. But so we are still an incubation project. And we're still looking for feedback, and we read the forums and answer the forum ourselves. So PEX is a two-person team. My colleague started 4 years ago, and I jumped in 3 years ago. And we're very interested in the ways you use PEX and the limitation maybe you find, and we change it quickly. Yes? You had a question? No. Yep.
Is there any way this would work in Visual Studio 2008?
It works in Visual Studio 2008. Yes?
Share the library for SharePoint. Is there a similar library for PEX for Visual?
Currently not. Our stand on it is we write, in a sense, a best practice library with SharePoint, and then we hope professional developers write it themselves for BizTalk. Currently, we're a two-person team in research. We cannot support all Microsoft technologies. But what we give you in the framework is the building blocks to build those models. We give you what we called a behave value. It's an undefined value until you give it until you assign it. We give you a collection of those, a dictionary of those, a set of those. And with these basic collections, you can build state. And state that PEX can understand. So you have the full source of a big example. And if you have any problem with BizTalk, shoot us an email on the forum. We'll see whether we can help you. Any more questions? I think we're almost out of time, 3 minutes, so, yep.
If you would run this code on a Dutch machine, it would probably crash because the field index is type is the LE and the L is just reversed.
Yes.
But that's due to the resource files. Is there a way to run a test, for instance, how that would be if you would deploy it to the machine?
Currently, it wouldn't crash because I don't even load the resource files. Oh, you mean localization test?
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say that's already outside of the scope of unit testing. So we don't deal with that. You still need integration test. But when you're developing your SharePoint service and you need this quick feedback because you're trying out, writing your test, fixing your application, then unit testing is a great tool. But it doesn't replace all the other kinds of testing. Yep. Once you have the test case, you can turn on code coverage, check them in, run them as part of the build. If you're using other test framework, it's a bit less integrated, but we also support them. I mean, there's no runner for end units, and they don't have a concept of instrumented runs, but it's still supported. So PEX is a great way to augment your test-driven development experience. So all I've shown here is test after.
Yeah.
Here's the way it works with PEX in test-driven, in TDD fashion, in a minute. You write your parameterized unit test, which you can do, as in TDD, and it drives the design of your application. And then you run PEX. PEX generates maybe a couple of passing test cases and a couple of failing test cases. You fix the first failing test case. Now, what do you do? Instead of writing a new unit test, you just run PEX again. The test case that used to break now passes, but there might be more failing test cases. So you're stuck in the loop of fixing your application with respect to your test until it's correct. So we shortcut the loop, and we generate the next test case for you. So in our demos, we'd always do a test after. But nothing prevents, in fact, it forces you to think at a higher level of abstraction when you have to write those parameterized tests. Try it out. So I guess it's 2:45, and I'm eating up your break, but I'll take any questions till tomorrow, till the next talk. Otherwise, thank you very much for attending.